not bring any firsthand knowledge. The events that predated my Ukraine service include the release of the so-called Black Ledger and Mr. Manafort's subsequent resignation from President Trump's campaign, and the departure from office of former Prosecutor General Viktor Shokin. Several other events occurred after I returned from Ukraine. These include President Trump's July 25th, 2019 call with President Zelensky, the discussions surrounding that phone call, and any discussions surrounding the delay of security assistance to Ukraine in the summer of 2019. As for events during my tenure in Ukraine, I want to reiterate first that the allegation that I disseminated a do not prosecute list was a fabrication. Mr. Lutsenko, the former Ukrainian prosecutor general who made that allegation, has acknowledged that the list never existed. I did not tell Mr. Lutsenko or other Ukrainian officials who they should or should not prosecute. Instead, I advocated the U.S. position that rule of law should prevail, and Ukrainian law enforcement, prosecutors, and judges should stop wielding their power selectively as a political weapon against their adversaries and start dealing with all consistently and according to the law. Also untrue are unsourced allegations that I told unidentified embassy employees or Ukrainian officials that President Trump's orders should be ignored because he was going to be impeached or for any other reason. I did not, and I would not say such a thing. Such statements would be inconsistent with my training as a Foreign Service officer and my role as an ambassador. The Obama administration did not ask me to help the Clinton campaign or harm the Trump campaign, nor would I have taken any such steps if they had. Partisanship of this type is not compatible with the role of a career Foreign Service officer. I have never met Hunter Biden, nor have I had any direct or indirect conversations with him. And although I have met former Vice President Biden several times over the course of our many years in government service, neither he nor the previous administration ever raised the issue of either Burisma or Hunter Biden with me. With respect to Mayor Giuliani, I have had only minimal contact with him, a total of three, none related to the events at issue. I do not understand Mr. Giuliani's motives for attacking me, nor can I offer an opinion on whether he believed the allegations he spread about me. Clearly, no one at the State Department did. What I can say is that Mr. Giuliani should have known those claims were suspect, coming as they reportedly did from individuals with questionable motives and with reason to believe that their political and financial ambitions would be stymied by our anti-corruption policy in Ukraine. After being asked by the Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs in early March 2019 to extend my tour until 2020, the smear campaign against me entered a new public phase in the United States. In the wake of the negative press, State Department officials suggested an earlier departure, and we agreed upon July 2019. I was then abruptly told, just weeks later in late April, to come back to Washington from Ukraine on the next plane. At the time I departed, Ukraine had just concluded game-changing presidential elections. It was a sensitive period with much at stake for the United States and called for all the experience and expertise we could muster. When I returned to the United States, Deputy Secretary of State Sullivan told me there had been a concerted campaign against me, that the president no longer wished me to serve as ambassador to Ukraine, and that, in fact, the president had been pushing for my removal since the prior summer. As Mr. Sullivan recently recounted during his Senate confirmation hearing, neither he nor anyone else ever explained or sought to justify the president's concerns about me, nor did anyone in the department justify my early departure by suggesting I had done something wrong. I appreciate that Mr. Sullivan publicly affirmed at his hearing that I have served capably and admirably. Although then and now, I have always understood that I served at the pleasure of the president, I still find it difficult to comprehend that foreign and private interests were able to undermine U.S. interests in this way. Individuals who apparently felt stymied by our efforts to promote stated U.S. policy against corruption, that is, to do our mission, were able to successfully conduct a campaign of disinformation against a sitting ambassador using unofficial back channels. As various witnesses have recounted, they shared baseless allegations with the president and convinced him to remove his ambassador, despite the fact that the State Department fully understood that the allegations were false and the sources highly suspect. These events should concern everyone in this room. Ambassadors are the symbol of the United States abroad. They are the personal representative of the president. They should always act and speak with full authority to advocate for U.S. policies. If our chief representative is kneecapped, it limits our effectiveness to safeguard the vital national security interests of the United States. This is especially important now, when the international landscape is more complicated and more competitive than it has been since the dissolution of the Soviet Union. Our Ukraine policy has been thrown into disarray, and shady interests the world over have learned how little it takes to remove an American ambassador who does not give them what they want. After these events, what foreign official, corrupt or not, could be blamed for wondering whether the U.S. ambassador represents the president's views? And what U.S. ambassador could be blamed for harboring the fear that they can't count on our government to support them as they implement stated U.S. policy and protect and defend U.S. interests? I'd like to comment on one other matter before taking your questions. At the closed deposition, I expressed grave concerns about the degradation of the Foreign Service over the past few years and the failure of State Department leadership to push back as foreign and corrupt interests apparently hijacked our Ukraine policy. I remain disappointed that the department's leadership and others have declined to acknowledge that the attacks against me and others are dangerously wrong. This is about far, far more than me or a couple of individuals. As Foreign Service professionals are being denigrated and undermined, the institution is also being degraded. This will soon cause real harm if it hasn't already. The State Department as a tool of foreign policy often doesn't get the same kind of attention or even respect as the military might of the Pentagon. But we are, as they say, the pointy end of the spear. If we lose our edge, the U.S. will inevitably have to use other tools even more than it does today. And those other tools are blunter, more expensive, and not universally effective. Moreover, the attacks are leading to a crisis in the State Department as the policy process is visibly unraveling. Leadership vacancies go unfilled, and senior and mid-level officers ponder an uncertain future. The crisis has moved from the impact on individuals to an impact on the institution itself. The State Department is being hollowed out from within at a competitive and complex time on the world stage. This is not a time to undercut our diplomats. It is the responsibility of the department's leaders to stand up for the institution and the individuals who make that institution still today the most effective diplomatic force in the world. And Congress has a responsibility to reinvest in our diplomacy. That's an investment in our national security. It's an investment in our future, in our children's future. As I close, let me be clear on who we are and how we serve this country. We are professionals. We are public servants who, by vocation and training, pursue the policies of the president, regardless of who holds that office or what party they affiliate with. We handle American citizen services, facilitate trade and commerce, work security issues, represent the U.S., and report to and advise Washington, to mention just some of our functions. And we make a difference every day. We are people who repeatedly uproot our lives, who risk and sometimes give our lives for this country. We are the 52 Americans who 40 years ago this month began 444 days of deprivation, torture, and captivity in Tehran. We are the dozens of Americans stationed at our embassy in Cuba and consulates in China who mysteriously and dangerously, and in some cases perhaps even permanently, were injured in attacks from unknown sources several years ago. And we are Ambassador Chris Stevens, Sean Patrick Smith, Ty Woods, and Glenn Doherty, people rightly called heroes for their ultimate sacrifice to this nation's foreign policy interests in Libya 8 years ago. We honor these individuals. They represent each one of you here and every American. These courageous individuals were attacked because they symbolized America. What you need to know, what Americans need to know, is that while thankfully most of us answer the call to duty in far less dramatic ways, every Foreign Service officer runs the same risks, and very often so do our families. They serve too. As individuals, as a community, we answer the call to duty to advance and protect the interests of the United States. We take our oath seriously, the same oath that each one of you take, to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and to bear true faith and allegiance to the same. I count myself lucky to be a Foreign Service officer, fortunate to serve with the best America has to offer, blessed to serve the American people for the last 33 years. I thank you for your attention. I welcome your questions.
Thank you, Ambassador. We count ourselves lucky to have you serve the country as you have for decades. We'll now move to the 45-minute rounds. I recognize myself and Majority Counsel for 45 minutes. Ambassador Yovanovitch, thank you again for appearing today. All Americans are deeply in your debt. Before I hand it over to Mr. Goldman, our staff counsel, I want to ask you about a few of the pivotal events of interest to the country. First of all, was fighting corruption in Ukraine a key element of U.S. policy and one on which you placed the highest priority?
Yes, it was.
And can you explain why?
It was important, and it was actually stated in our policy and in our strategy. It was important because corruption was undermining the integrity of the governance system in Ukraine. And as I noted in my statement, countries that have leaders that are honest and trustworthy make better partners for us. Countries where there is a level playing field for our U.S. business makes it easier for our companies to do business there, to trade, and to profit in those countries. And what had been happening since the Soviet Union, and this is very much a Soviet legacy, is that corrupt interests were undermining not only the governance but also the economy of Ukraine. We see enormous potential in Ukraine and would like to have a more capable, more trustworthy partner there.
And I know this may be awkward for you to answer since it's a question about yourself and your reputation, but is it fair to say that you earned a reputation for being a champion of anti-corruption efforts in Ukraine?
Yes, yes.
I don't know if you had a chance to watch George Kent's testimony yesterday, but would you agree with his rather frank assessment that if you fight corruption, you're going to piss off some corrupt people?
Yes.
And in your efforts fighting corruption to advance U.S. policy interests, did you anger some of the corrupt leaders in Ukraine?
Yes.
Was one of those corrupt people Prosecutor General Yuri Lutsenko?
Yes, I believe so.
Was another one of those corrupt people Lutsenko's predecessor, another corrupt prosecutor general named Viktor Shokin?
Apparently so, although I've never met him.
At some point, did you come to learn that both Lutsenko and Shokin were in touch with Rudy Giuliani, President Trump's lawyer and representative?
Yes.
In fact, did Giuliani try to overturn a decision that you participated in to deny Shokin a visa?
Yes, that is what I was told.
And that denial was based on Mr. Shokin's corruption?
Yes, that's true.
And Was it Mr. Lutsenko, among others, who coordinated with Mr. Giuliani to peddle false accusations against you as well as the Bidens?
Yes, that is my understanding.
And were these smears also amplified by the president's son, Donald Trump Jr., as well as certain hosts on Fox?
Yes, that is the case.
In the face of this smear campaign, did colleagues at the State Department try to get a statement of support for you from Secretary Pompeo?
Yes.
Were they successful?
No.
Did you come to learn that they couldn't issue such a statement because they feared it would be undercut by the president?
Yes.
And then were you told that though you had done nothing wrong, you did not enjoy the confidence of the president and could no longer serve as ambassador?
Yes, that is correct.
And in fact, you flew home from Kiev on the same day as the inauguration of Ukraine's new president?
That's true.
That inauguration was attended by three who have become known as the Three Amigos, Ambassadors Sondland, Volker, and Perry, was it?
Yes.
And 3 days after that inauguration, in a meeting with President Trump, are you aware that the president designated these Three Amigos to coordinate Ukraine policy with Rudy Giuliani?
Since then, I've become aware of that.
This is the same Rudy Giuliani who orchestrated the smear campaign against you?
Yes.
And the same Rudy Giuliani who, during the now infamous July 25th phone call, the president recommended to Zelensky in the context of the two investigations the president wanted into the 2016 election and the Bidens?
Yes.
And finally, Ambassador, in that July 25th phone call, the president praises one of these corrupt former Ukrainian prosecutors and says they were treated very unfairly. They were treated unfairly. Not you, who was smeared and recalled, but one of them. What message does that send to your colleagues in the U.S. Embassy in Kiev?
I'm just not sure what the basis for that kind of a statement would be. Certainly not from our reporting over years.
Did you have concern, though, or do you have concern today, about what message the president's action sends to the people who are still in Ukraine, representing the United States, when a well-respected ambassador can be smeared out of her post with the participation and acquiescence of the president of the United States?
Well, it's, I think, been a big hit for morale, both at U.S. Embassy Kyiv, but also more broadly in the State Department.
Is it fair to say that other ambassadors and others of lesser rank who serve the United States and embassies around the world might look at this and think, if I take on corrupt people in these countries, that could happen to me?
I think that's a fair statement, yes.
Mr. Goldman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ambassador Yovanovitch, on April 24th of this year, at approximately 10 p.m., you received a telephone call while you were at the embassy in Kyiv from the Director General of the State Department. This was just 3 days after President Zelensky's election and the call between President Trump and President Zelensky that we just heard from Ranking Member Nunes. At the time that this urgent call came in, what were you in the middle of doing?
I was hosting an event in honor of Katya Hanzyuk, who is an anti-corruption activist, or was an anti-corruption activist in Ukraine. We had given her the Woman of Courage Award from Ukraine, and in fact, the Worldwide Woman of Courage event at the Worldwide Woman of Courage event in Washington, D.C., Secretary Pompeo singled her out for her amazing work in Ukraine to fight corrupt interests in the south of Ukraine. She very tragically died because she was attacked by acid, and several months later died a very, very painful death. We thought it was important that justice be done for Katya Hanzyuk, and for others who fight corruption in Ukraine, because this is, it's not a, you know, kind of a tabletop exercise there. Lives are in the balance. And so we wanted to bring attention to this. We held an event and gave her father, who of course is still mourning her, that award, the Women of Courage event.
And her Women of Courage award stemmed from her anti-corruption efforts in Ukraine?
Yes, that is true.
Was it ever determined who threw the acid and killed her?
There have been investigations, but while some of the lower-ranking individuals that were involved in this have been arrested, those who ordered this have not yet been apprehended.
After you stepped away from this anti-corruption event to take this call, what did the Director General tell you?
She said that there was great concern on the seventh floor of the State Department. That's where the leadership of the State Department sits. There was great concern. They were worried. She just wanted to give me a heads up about this. And, you know, things seemed to be going on. And so she just wanted to give me a heads up. You know, it's hard to know how to react to something like that. I asked her what it was about. What did she think it was about? She didn't know. She said that she was going to try and find out more, but she had wanted to give me a heads up. In fact, I think she may even have been instructed to give me a heads up on that. And so I asked her, you know, kind of what is the next step here? So she said she would try to find out more, and she would try to call me by midnight.
What happened next?
Around 1 o'clock in the morning, she called me again, and she said that there were great concerns. There were concerns up the street, and she said I needed to get on the home, come home immediately, get on the next plane to the U.S. And I asked her why, and she said she wasn't sure, but there were concerns about my security. I asked her my physical security, because sometimes Washington knows more than we do about these things. And she said no, she hadn't gotten that impression that it was a physical security issue, but they were concerned about my security, and I needed to come home right away. You know, I argued, this is extremely irregular, and no reason given. But in the end, I did get on the next plane home.
You said there were concerns up the street. What did you understand that to mean?
The White House.
Did she explain in any more detail what she meant by concerns about your security?
No, she didn't. I did specifically ask whether this had to do with Mayor Giuliani's allegations against me and so forth, and she said she didn't know. It didn't even actually appear to me that she seemed to be aware of that. No reason was offered.
Did she explain what the urgency was for you to come back on the next flight?
The only thing that's pertinent to that was that when she said that there were concerns about my security, that's all. But it was not further explained.
Now, prior to this abrupt call back to Washington, D.C., had you been offered an extension of your post by the State Department?
Yes. The Undersecretary for Political Affairs had asked whether I would extend for another year, departing in July of 2020.
When was that request made?
In early March.
So about a month and a half before this call?
Yes.
Did anyone at the State Department ever express concerns about your job performance?
No.
Now, after you returned to Washington a couple days after that, you met with the Deputy Secretary of State. And at your deposition, you said that the Deputy Secretary of State told you that you had done nothing wrong, but that there was a concerted campaign against you. What did he mean by that?
I'm not exactly sure, but I took it to mean that the allegations that Mayor Giuliani and others were putting out there, that's what it was.
And who else was involved in this concerted campaign against you?
There were some members of the press and others in Mayor Giuliani's circle.
And who from Ukraine?
In Ukraine, I think... well, Mr. Lutsenko, the prosecutor general, and Mr. Shokin, his predecessor, certainly.
And at this time, Mr. Lutsenko was the lead prosecutor general, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
And had President Zelensky indicated whether or not he was going to keep him on after the election?
He had indicated he would not be keeping on Mr. Lutsenko.
And I believe you testified earlier that Mr. Lutsenko had a reputation for being corrupt, is that right?
That's correct.
Now, during this conversation, did the deputy secretary tell you about your future as the ambassador to Ukraine?
Well, he told me I needed to leave.
What did he say?
He said that, I mean, there was a lot of back and forth, but ultimately he said the words that, you know, every Foreign Service officer understands: the president has lost confidence in you. That was, you know, a terrible thing to hear. And I said, well, you know, I guess I have to go then. But no real reason was offered as to why I had to leave and why it was being done in such a manner.
Did you have any indication that the State Department had lost confidence in you?
No.
And were you provided any reason why the president lost confidence in you?
No.
Now, you testified at your deposition that you were told at some point that Secretary Pompeo had tried to protect you, but that he was no longer able to do that. Were you aware of these efforts to protect you?
No, I was not until that meeting with Deputy Secretary Sullivan.
And did you understand who he was trying to protect you from?
Well, my understanding was that the president had wanted me to leave, and there was some discussion about that over the prior months.
Did you have any understanding why Secretary Pompeo was no longer able to protect you?
No, it was just a statement made that he was no longer able to protect me.
So just like that, you had to leave Ukraine as soon as possible?
Yes.
How did that make you feel?
Terrible, honestly. I mean, after 33 years of service to our country, it was terrible. It's not the way I wanted my career to end.
Now, you also told this deputy secretary that this was a dangerous precedent. What did you mean by that?
I was worried about our policy, but also personnel. And I asked him, how are you going to explain this to people in the State Department, the press, the public, the Ukrainians, because everybody is watching. And so if people see somebody who, and of course it had been very public, frankly, the attacks on me by Mayor Giuliani and others, and Mr. Lutsenko in Ukraine, if people see that I, who have been, you know, promoting our policies on anti-corruption, if they can undermine me and get me pulled out of Ukraine, what does that mean for our policy? Do we still have that same policy? How are we going to affirmatively put that forward, number one? Number two, when other countries, other actors in other countries see that private interests, foreign interests can come together and get a U.S. ambassador removed, what's going to stop them from doing that in the future in other countries? Often the work we do, we try to be diplomatic about it, but as Deputy Assistant Secretary George Kent said, you know, sometimes we get people really angry with us. It's uncomfortable. And we are doing our jobs, but sometimes people become very angry with us. And if they realize that they can just remove us, they're going to do that.
How did the Deputy Secretary respond?
He said those were good questions, and he would get back to me.
Did he ever get back to you?
He asked to see me the following day.
What did he say to you then?
The conversation was more, and, you know, again, I'm grateful for this, but really more to see how I was doing, and what would I do next? How could he help?
But he didn't address the dangerous precedent that you flagged for him?
No.
Now, you understood, of course, that the President of the United States could remove you and that you served at the pleasure of the President. Is that right?
That's right.
But in your 33 years as a Foreign Service officer, have you ever heard of a President of the United States recalling another ambassador without cause based on allegations that the State Department itself knew to be false?
No.
Now, you testified in your opening statement that you had left Ukraine by the time of the July 25th call between President Trump and President Zelensky. When was the first time that you saw the call record for this phone call?
When it was released publicly at the end of September, I believe.
And prior to reading that call record, were you aware that President Trump had specifically made reference to you in that call?
No.
What was your reaction to learning that?
I was shocked. Absolutely shocked and devastated, frankly.
What do you mean by devastated?
I was shocked and devastated that I would feature in a phone call between two heads of state in such a manner where President Trump said that I was bad news to another world leader and that I would be going through some things. So I was, it was a terrible moment. A person who saw me actually reading the transcript said that the color drained from my face. I think I even had a physical reaction. I think, even now words kind of fail me.
Well, without upsetting you too much, I'd like to show you the excerpts from the call. And the first one, where President Trump says, the former ambassador from the United States, the woman, was bad news, and the people she was dealing with in the Ukraine were bad news. So I just want to let you know. What was your reaction when you heard the President of the United States refer to you as bad news?
I couldn't believe it. I mean, again, shocked, appalled, devastated that the President of the United States would talk about any ambassador like that to a foreign head of state. And it was me. I mean, I couldn't believe it.
The next excerpt when the president references you is a short one. But he said, well, she's going to go through some things. What did you think when President Trump told President Zelensky and you read that you were going to go through some things?
I didn't know what to think, but I was very concerned.
What were you concerned about?
She's going to go through some things. It didn't sound good. It sounded like a threat.
Did you feel threatened?
I did.
How so?
I didn't know exactly. It's not, you know, a very precise phrase, but I think it didn't feel like I was, I really don't know how to answer the question any further except to say that it kind of felt like a vague threat, and so I wondered what that meant. It concerned me.
Now, in the same call where the president, as you just said, threatens you to a foreign leader, he also praises the corrupt Ukrainian prosecutor who led the false smear campaign against you. I want to show you another excerpt or two from the transcript, or the call record, rather, where the President of the United States says, good, because I heard you had a prosecutor who was very good and he was shut down, and that's really unfair. A lot of people are talking about that, the way they shut your very good prosecutor down, and you had some very bad people involved. And he went on later to say, I heard the prosecutor was treated very badly, and he was a very fair prosecutor. So good luck with everything. Now, Ambassador Yovanovitch, after nearly 3 years in Ukraine where you tried to clean up the Prosecutor General's office, was it the U.S. Embassy's view that the former Prosecutor General was a very good and very fair prosecutor?
No, it was not.
And in fact, he was rather corrupt, is that right?
That was our belief.
The Prosecutor General's office is a long-running problem in Ukraine, is that right?
Yes.
So how did you feel when you heard President Trump speak so highly of the corrupt Ukrainian prosecutor who helped to execute the smear campaign to have you removed?
Well, it was disappointing. It was concerning. It wasn't certainly based on anything that the State Department would have reported, or frankly, anybody else in the U.S. government. There was an interagency consensus that when Mr. Lutsenko came into office, we were very hopeful that he would actually do the things that he said he would set out to do, including reforming the Prosecutor General's office, but that did not materialize.
So this was not the uniform position of the official U.S. policymakers, is that right?
Right.
Now let's go back to the smear campaign that you referenced, and in March when you said it became public. And you previously testified that you had learned that Rudy Giuliani, President Trump's lawyer and representative, who was also mentioned in that July 25th call, was in regular communication with the corrupt prosecutor general in late 2018 and early 2019. And at one point in your deposition, you said that that being Giuliani and the corrupt foreign prosecutor general, had plans to, quote, do things to me. What did you mean by that?
I didn't really know, but that's what I had been told by Ukrainian officials.
Did you subsequently understand a little bit more what that meant?
Well, you know, now, with the advantage of hindsight, I think that meant removing me from my job in Ukraine.
Who did you understand to be working with Mr. Giuliani as his associates in Ukraine?
Mr. Lutsenko, Mr. Shokhin. I believe that there were also Ukrainian Americans, Mr. Parnas and Mr. Fruman, who have recently been indicted.
Those are the two who have been indicted in New York?
Southern District of New York.
Now, at the end of March, this effort by Giuliani and his associates resulted in a series of articles in the Hill publication that were based on allegations in part from Lutsenko, the corrupt prosecutor general. And just to summarize some of these allegations, there were, among others, three different categories. One category included the attacks against you, which you referenced in your opening statement, including that you had badmouthed the president and had given the prosecutor general a do not prosecute list. There was another that included allegations of Ukrainian interference in the 2016 election. And then there was a third that related to allegations concerning Burisma and the Bidens. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Yes.
Were these articles and allegations then promoted by others associated with the president in the United States?
They seem to be promoted by those around Mayor Giuliani.
I'm going to show you a couple of exhibits, including a tweet here by President Trump himself on March 20th, which was the first day that one of these articles was published. It appears to be a quote that says, John Solomon, who's the author of the articles, : as Russia collusion fades, Ukrainian plot to help Clinton emerges, unquote, at Sean Hannity at Fox News. And then if I could go to another tweet 4 days later, this is the president's son, Donald Trump Jr., who tweets, we need more at Richard Grenell's, who's the ambassador to Germany, is that right?
That's correct.
and less of these jokers as ambassadors. And it's a retweet of one of John Solomon's articles, or an article referencing the allegations, that says, calls grow to remove Obama's U.S. ambassador to Ukraine. Were you aware of these tweets at the time?
Yes.
What was your reaction to seeing this?
Well, I was worried.
What were you worried about?
That this didn't seem, these attacks were, being repeated by the president himself and his son.
And were you aware whether they received attention on primetime television, on Fox News as well?
Yes, they did.
Now, was the allegation that you were bad-mouthing President Trump true?
No.
Was the allegation that you had created a do-not-prosecute list to give to the prosecutor general in Ukraine true?
No.
In fact, didn't the corrupt prosecutor general himself later recant those allegations?
Yes.
Now, when these articles were first published, did the State Department issue a response?
As you said, there was a series of articles. So after the first article, which was an interview with Mr. Lutsenko, and was only really about me and made certain allegations about me, the State Department came out the following day with a very strong statement saying that these allegations were fabrications.
So the statement addressed the falsity of the allegations themselves?
Yes.
It didn't say anything about your job performance in any way?
Honestly, I haven't looked at it in a very long time. I think it was generally probably laudatory, but I can't recall.
Did anyone in the State Department raise any concerns with you or express any belief in these allegations?
No. I mean, people thought it was ridiculous.
Now, after these false allegations were made against you, did you have any discussions with anyone in leadership in the State Department about a potential statement of support from the department or the secretary himself?
Yes. After the tweets that you just showed us, it seemed to me that if the president's son is saying things like this, that it would be very hard to continue in my position and have authority in Ukraine unless the State Department came out pretty strongly behind me. And so, over over the weekend of March 22nd, I think that's about the date, there was a lot of discussion on email among a number of people about what could be done. The Undersecretary for Political Affairs called me on Sunday, and I said, it's really important that the Secretary himself come out and be supportive, because otherwise it's hard for me to be the kind of representative you need here. And he said he would talk to the Secretary. I mean, that's my recollection of the call. That may not be exactly how it played out, but that was the my recollection.
This is David Hale, the Undersecretary of Political Affairs, who's the number three person at the State Department?
Yes.
Did he indicate to you that he supported such a statement of support for you?
I think he must have, because I don't think he would have gone to the Secretary if he didn't support it. I mean, you wouldn't bring a bad idea to the Secretary of State.
And your general understanding is that you did have the full support of the State Department, is that right?
Yes.
And in fact, during your 33-year career as a Foreign Service officer, did you ever hear of any serious concerns about your job performance?
No.
Was this statement of support ultimately issued for you?
No, it was not.
Did you learn why not?
Yeah. Yes, I was told that there was a concern on the seventh floor that if a statement of support was issued, whether by the State Department or by the Secretary personally, that it could be undermined.
How could it be undermined?
That the President might issue a tweet contradicting that or something to that effect.
So let me see if I get this right. You were one of the most senior diplomats in the State Department. You've been there for 33 years. You'd won numerous awards. You've been appointed as an ambassador 3 times by both Republican and Democratic presidents. And the State Department would not issue a statement in support of you against false allegations because they were concerned about a tweet from the President of the United States?
That's my understanding.
Mr. Coleman, if I could follow up on that question, it seems like an appropriate time. Vasily Ivanovich, as we sit here testifying, the President is attacking you on Twitter. And I'd like to give you a chance to respond. I'll read part of one of his tweets. Everywhere Marie Yovanovitch went turned bad. She started off in Somalia. How did that go? He goes on to say, later in the tweet, is a U.S. president's absolute right to appoint ambassadors. Well, first of all, Ambassador Yovanovitch, the Senate has a chance to confirm or deny an ambassador, do they not?
Yes, advise and consent.
What would you like to respond to the president's attack that everywhere you went turned bad?
Well, I don't think I have such powers, not in Mogadishu, Somalia, not in other places. I actually think that where I've served over the years, I and others have demonstrably made things better, you know, for the U.S. as well as for the countries that I've served in. Ukraine, for example, where there are huge challenges, including, you know, on the issue that we're discussing today of corruption. Huge challenges. But they've made a lot of progress since 2014, including in the years that I was there. And I think in part, I mean, the Ukrainian people get the most credit for that. But a part of that credit goes to the work of the United States and to me as the ambassador in Ukraine.
Ambassador, you've shown the courage to come forward today and testify. Notwithstanding the fact you were urged by the White House or State Department not to, notwithstanding the fact that, as you testified earlier, the president implicitly threatened you in that call record. And now the president in real time is attacking you. What effect do you think that has on other witnesses' willingness to come forward and expose wrongdoing?
Well, it's very intimidating.
It's designed to intimidate, is it not?
I mean, I can't speak to what the president is trying to do, but I think the effect is to be intimidating.
Well, I want to let you know, Ambassador, that some of us here take witness intimidation very, very seriously. Mr. Goldman.
Ambassador Yovanovitch, you indicated that those same articles in March that included the smear campaign also included allegations related to Ukraine's interference in the 2016 election and the Burisma-Biden connection. Is that right?
Yes.
So I'm going to end my questioning where we were before, which was the July 25th call. And President Trump not only insults you and praises the corrupt prosecutor general, but he also, as you know by now, references these two investigations. First, immediately after President Zelensky thanks President Trump for his, quote, great support in the area of defense, unquote, President Trump responds, I would like you to do us a favor, though, because our country has been through a lot and Ukraine knows a lot about it. I would like you to find out what happened with this whole situation with Ukraine. They say CrowdStrike. I guess you have one of your wealthy people, the server. They say Ukraine has it. And then he goes on in that same paragraph to say, whatever you can do, it's very important that you do it if that's possible. Now, Ambassador Yovanovitch, from your experience as the ambassador in Ukraine for almost 3 years, and understanding that President Zelensky was not in politics before he ran for president and was a new president on this call. How would you expect President Zelensky to interpret a request for a favor?
The U.S. Relationship for Ukraine is the single most important relationship. And so I think that President Zelensky, any president, would do what they could to lean in on a favor request. I'm not saying that that's a yes. I'm saying they would try to lean in and see what they could do.
Fair to say that a president of Ukraine that is so dependent on the United States would do just about anything within his power to please the president of the United States, if he could?
If he could. I mean, I'm sure there are limits, and I understand there were a lot of discussions in the Ukrainian government about all of this. But we are an important relationship on the security side and on the political side. And so the president of Ukraine, one of the most important functions that individual has is to make sure the relationship with the U.S. is rock solid.
Now, are you familiar with these allegations of Ukrainian interference in the 2016 election?
I mean, there have been rumors out there about things like that. But, there was nothing hard, at least nothing that I was aware of.
There's nothing based in fact to
right.
support these allegations.
Yes.
And, in fact, who was responsible for interfering and meddling in the 2016 election?
Well, the U.S. intelligence community has concluded that it was Russia.
Ambassador Yovanovitch, are you aware that in February of 2017, Vladimir Putin himself promoted this theory of Ukrainian interference in the 2016 election?
Maybe I knew that once and have forgotten, but I'm not familiar with it now.
Well, let me show you a press statement that President Putin made in a joint press conference with Viktor Orban of Hungary on February 2nd of 2017, where he says, "Second, as we all know, during the presidential campaign in the United States, the Ukrainian government adopted a unilateral position in favor of one candidate. More than that, certain oligarchs, certainly with the approval of the political leadership, funded this candidate, or female candidate to be more precise." Now, how would this theory of Ukraine interference in the 2016 election be in Vladimir Putin's interest?
Well, President Putin must have been aware that there were concerns in the U.S. about Russian meddling in the 2016 elections and what the potential was for Russian meddling in the future. So, classic for an intelligence officer to try to throw off the scent and, create an alternative narrative that maybe might get picked up and get some credence.
An alternative narrative that would absolve his own wrongdoing?
Yeah.
And when he talks about an oligarch and he talks about the support of the Ukrainian government, there's also a reference in the July 25th call to a wealthy Ukrainian. Is it your understanding that what Vladimir Putin is saying here in this press statement in February 2017 is similar to what President Trump says on the July 25th call related to the 2016 election?
Maybe.
Now let me show you another exhibit from the call related to the Bidens, which I'm sure you're familiar with. President Trump says the other thing. There's a lot of talk about Biden's son, that Biden stopped the prosecution, and a lot of people want to find out about that. So whatever you can do with the Attorney General would be great. Biden went around bragging that he stopped the prosecution, so if you can look into it, it sounds horrible to me. Now, are you familiar with the allegations related to Vice President Biden?
Yes.
Do you know whether he ever went around bragging that he stopped the prosecution of anyone?
No.
And in fact, when Vice President Biden acted to remove the former corrupt prosecutor in Ukraine, did he do so as part of official United States policy?
Official U.S. policy.
And
that was endorsed and was the policy of a number of other international stakeholders, other countries, other monetary institutions, financial institutions.
And in fact, if he helped to remove a corrupt Ukrainian prosecutor general who was not prosecuting enough corruption, that would increase the chances that corrupt companies in Ukraine would be investigated. Isn't that right?
One would think so.
And that could include Burisma, right?
Yes.
Now, at the time of this call, Vice President Biden was the front runner for the Democratic nomination for president and President Trump's potential next opponent in the election. Is it your understanding that President Trump's request to have Vice President Biden investigated, was that part of official U.S. policy as you knew it?
Well, I should say that I had, at the time of this phone call, I had already departed Ukraine 2 months prior.
Right, but you're familiar with, it didn't change that much in 2 months, right?
It certainly would not have been the policy in May when I left.
And were these two investigations part of the anti-corruption platform that you championed in Ukraine for 3 years?
No.
And these investigations, do they appear to you to be to benefit the president's personal and political interests rather than the national interest?
Well, they certainly could.
Now, just returning to the allegations in the Hill publication in March that were promoted by Mr. Giuliani, the president's lawyer, were those two allegations similar to the two allegations that the president wanted President Zelensky to investigate?
Yes.
So ultimately, in the July 25th phone call with the Ukrainian president, the president of the United States endorsed the false allegations against you and the Bidens. Is that right?
Yes.
I yield back, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I have a parliamentary inquiry, please.
The gentleman will suspend. Votes are fairly imminent. We're going to take a brief recess. I would ask everyone to remain seated to allow the witness to exit the room, and we will resume after votes.
Mr. Chairman, I have a parliamentary inquiry.
The gentleman can seek recognition after we resume.
Live from the Capitol, the House Intelligence Committee conducting the second public impeachment hearing featuring Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch, who testified that she was ousted as U.S. ambassador to Ukraine because of what she called corrupt interests that manipulated President Trump using a disinformation campaign. And when President Trump told the president of Ukraine in their July phone call that the former ambassador was going to go through some things, she told House Democratic Attorney Daniel Goldman it felt like a vague threat. I'm Aaron Katursky. You're listening to live coverage from ABC News. Straight back live to the Capitol now, ABC's Inez Dedequatera. Inez.
Hey, Aaron. So we saw Democrats really try to play up Marie Yovanovitch's credentials here. So she is one of the State Department's most senior diplomats. She has 33 years experience. She's worked with presidents from both sides of the aisle. And Democrats here really tried to paint the picture of someone who was a casualty of the shadow foreign policy that was being conducted in Ukraine by the president's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani. Democrats talked her up as an anti-corruption champion, and they kind of focused their questions on asking why Marie Yovanovitch was pushed out of Ukraine if what President Trump was really trying to do there was rooting out corruption. That's an argument that Republicans have been making since we found out about this pressure campaign. They've been saying that the president simply wanted to root out corruption in Ukraine. Democrats say that's not true, that Trump only wanted Ukraine to investigate his political opponents, and that that's why Marie Yovanovitch was pushed out, and that what happened to her is evidence of that. So they argued today that she was an obstacle to what President President Trump was trying to do in Ukraine.
ABC's Inez Della Quintero with us live from the Capitol, where this hearing will resume after House votes. I want to turn to the White House, ABC's Karen Travers. Two things, Karen. One, as the hearing began, the White House released a transcript of President Trump's first phone call with the newly elected president of Ukraine at the time in April, President Zelensky. And the second thing, Karen, that in real time, the president tweeted about Ambassador Yovanovitch after the White House had said he would not be tuning in.
And that was a very stunning development, especially because the White House had said that he would be tuning in just for the opening statement by the ranking Republican Devin Nunes, but that he was going to be busy today. He certainly seemed to be tuning in for more than just that statement. But on that transcript, this is the first phone call the president had with the president of Ukraine in April. And this wasn't a document, Aaron, that lawmakers were pushing for. It was requested, but there wasn't a sense that this would be controversial or anything complicated. In fact, Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, the National Security Council official who was on both of the president's calls with Ukraine, he told lawmakers that the first call was very good and it went exactly as planned. But what the White House has tried to do is say, we will release this first phone call, that will be perfect, and thus the second call is perfect. Notably, though, the transcript, and we say that with a little asterisk next to it because the White House will say it's a memo of the call. This, the details released of that first phone call, it's largely congratulatory. They talk about coming to visit the White House, the great food in Ukraine, and the Miss Universe pageant that the president used to own. But there's no mention of corruption in Ukraine. And the reason that's important is because the White House, the night of that phone call, released a readout, as they call it. Here's what the two presidents talked about. And they say the president did commit to President Zelensky his support to rooting out corruption in Ukraine. That does not appear anywhere in the details released by the White House, raising a lot of questions as to whether or not we got the full transcript of that first call.
ABC's Karen Travers with us live from the White House. I want to turn to our political analyst, Steve Roberts, who's been following along with us. Steve, I wanted to get your impressions of Ambassador Yovanovitch's testimony. On one hand, she has been a compelling witness, but the narrative seems a bit removed from the heart of the case.
Well, that's true. She's a very compelling witness, a very impressive career, 33 years in the State Department, very calm, very collected, just like the other two witnesses we saw earlier in the week. She appears as a professional, as a career diplomat who has served presidents of both parties, as a fact witness. And in that sense, she was very impressive, and I think she did said some things that bolstered the Democrats' case, as you say, not directly but indirectly. She kept emphasizing how important Ukraine was to the American national interest. She pointed out that Ukraine borders on four different NATO countries, that it's involved in a hot war with Russia, and it's central to the larger case the Democrats are trying to build, that Ukraine matters, that whatever the president did there, whatever word you want to use, quid pro quo, bribery, extortion, that it was a very important move by the president because America's own national interest is at stake in the Ukraine. So she couldn't speak directly to the famous phone call. She could speak to the larger question of why Ukraine matters and therefore why what the president has alleged to have done rises to the level of impeachment. She didn't say that because she doesn't talk about impeachment, but she's emphasizing the importance of Ukraine, and that is very much part of the Democrats' larger case that they're trying to make to the American public, Aaron.
ABC's political analyst Steve Roberts with us live from Washington, where the hearing involving Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch will resume after House votes. A programming note, we will return to air with the Republican questioning of Ambassador Yovanovitch once the hearing resumes. For now, I'm Aaron Katursky, and you've been listening to live coverage from ABC News.
ABC News, honored winner of four Edward R. Murrow Awards. ABC News, America's number one news choice.